This is 101.9 FM, Voice of Vashon, KVSH. I'm your host, Liz Peterson, here on Raise the Vibe, where I'm talking to healers, psychics, and businesses on and around Vashon you can tap into on your healing journey. Today in the show, I have Grace Bell. She'll be discussing the work of Byron Katie and much more. Grace, welcome to the show.
I am so happy to be here. It's wonderful to be on Vashon Island.
So glad you can join us.
Yeah.
So you're new to Vashon. You're not a Vashon.
Right. You would say I'm not a native net Vashon, but I have lived in Seattle since I was 8 years old.
Oh, great. So that counts. In and around.
That counts. And I've been here. I've been here, you know, many times off and on over the years, which is great. But I wouldn't say I'm a native.
And that's okay. We're happy to have you here. Yeah. So glad you can join me here in the studio today. I'm really excited about the work that you do. Grace does the work of Byron Katie. And if you could start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got, you know, on this path in life, that would be great.
Yeah. Oh, I was already very, very interested, like so many of us are, in healing modalities, therapeutic things. And it was partially because I had a lot of anxiety, or like internal quest for, you know, the truth and kind of understanding. And I even had gotten a master's degree. When was that? I was approaching like in my about 30 years old. And so I was in graduate school studying applied behavioral science and really wanting to understand the mind. I definitely had my own anxiety and seeking, as I said. And so, you know, when you're in grad school reading all the things on whatever the latest mental health issues are and all the modalities of healing, I would go to the bookstore all the time. And then you went to the bookstore, you know, at that time. It was in the late 1990s. You didn't order anything online, I don't think, yet, right?
No, not quite yet.
So it was, you know, I would just spend time going to the bookstore, loved it. And the latest thing was on those, you know, the new things that are coming out was Byron Katie. I loved the title, Loving What Is, when it came out. I think it was the very, very early 2000s. And so it was just an easy, you know, I'd usually go home with like 5 books every time I went to the bookstore. Yes. And many things from a psychology or comparative religion or any, you know, spirituality sections. And I read that and I couldn't put it down from cover to cover. And I tried to do her modality, because it's actually a thing that you hear about her philosophy and what happened with her, which was kind of a huge shift of consciousness in her 40s. And I sat down to try to do the work where she explains how to do it once you've read some of her story.
Right.
And I just could not really, I'm like, what? I don't get it. It's supposed to be so simple. It's asking and answering 4 questions and then finding turnarounds to your thoughts. But I just had a real trouble, like, I'm not really sure how to answer that question.
In her story, like, what led her to that?
Ah, very interesting, because by what she shares is it was kind of like Eckhart Tolle's experience, which is it just happened. She was in extreme suffering, downhill suffering, like agoraphobic, wouldn't even leave the house, severely depressed.
Wow.
Smoking cigarettes all day, every day, watching TV, really, really bound in her life, and went to a treatment center for eating disorders, because it was what was covered by her insurance.
Okay.
And she also would have considered herself to have an eating disorder as well, which I also did. So I was drawn to her story.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And when she was there, she was sleeping on the floor because she didn't think she deserved to have a bed.
Wow.
And no one would even be her roommate because they were too scared of her. And this famous story of she woke up because she felt something on her foot, which was a cockroach crawling on her foot. But then she woke all the way up. Like, she completely had no identity, lay there for however long it took. Whatever that period of time was, she describes it was a real beyond mind experience, that she suddenly realized she was believing everything she thought prior to that moment, and from that moment forward never has again. But it was a radical shift. She even didn't speak for a while.
Wow.
Yeah. So she didn't even know who she was for a little bit. Very radical.
That is radical. I couldn't even imagine.
I know.
Not believing in my thoughts, because our thoughts are nonstop.
Totally. Yeah. You just hear those voices going on all the time, chattering. And what I gather from her by what she shared is that they were very violent, you know, inside her own mind. Mm. But a lot of us have somewhat violent thoughts in our own minds. I mean, I certainly did. That's what the anxiety would be like. Right. It's like, you know, what's wrong with you? Why did you do that? Why did you just say that?
Yeah,
you know,
self-critic.
Can't you figure this out? Yeah, you know, and that gets very, it's very harsh, and it's very, so we don't know what to do with that voice, you know, mm-hmm. or that just that it comes up all the time, anxiety around being with people or however you're, whether or not you're succeeding in the world. And I definitely had that.
Right.
So I liked her story. You know, I was like, ooh, that's fascinating. What happened over there? How can I get it? you know?
Yeah, so I'm familiar with anxiety in my own life. It actually led me to the work that I do. You know, in my early 20s, I was experiencing anxiety and panic attacks, and it actually led me to my four-year program in healing work. So how did she go from, you know, this moment, you know, where she's laying there on the floor and she's not experiencing her thoughts anymore? How did she turn that into something that would help others?
Oh, such a great question. Because I think for a while there was just this incorporating it into her life, finding out who she was again, being kind of way out there, very, very radical, very radical space. And you know, great stories about just marching off into the desert. She lived in a little town called Barstow, California, and just marching off into the desert without an idea about what time you need to turn around or when you need to come home, and people find, you know, and everything just being alive and wonderful, but kind of being in, getting calls, like her husband would get a call, Byron Katie is, or your wife is, yeah. you know, and you have to go get her. And, but that led to people learning about her. They called her the woman who made friends with the wind, because apparently that town is severely windy all the time. It's kind of in the desert, like almost in Nevada, like a truck stop kind of a place. And so knocks on her door started happening. And you know, she felt a great deal of love, even though it seemed a little bit crazy to some of us. And just started getting invited to groups and asked to do a retreat. Can you do this? Can you come work with us? Can you come do this? And that she just followed the directions. She has this little phrase of, I just follow the simple directions.
Nice, I like that.
Yeah, yeah. And that was in 1980s. So it's been a long time. Yeah, so she's been just building this ever since. So she has a huge, her program, if you go to the School for the Work, that's 9 days. It's got 200 people in it.
Wow.
Yeah. In a big conference center, wonderful. In a hotel. You know?
Yeah, I did one of her weekend workshops through East West Bookshop not too long ago, which was fantastic to, you know, learn the process.
Yes.
So let's get into a little bit of the process. So what is the work?
So those four questions, and then turning it around, the questions are, first of all, you have to identify a thought and be kind of specific and simple about it. Because, you know, we can have a whole many thoughts about, especially that's what I find anxiety to be. It's like it speeds along really quick. But you can just think of a simple thought like, oh my gosh, he doesn't listen to me. You know, lots of times interactions with people are really good ones for where we find our stress. It's not the only place, but he doesn't listen to me, because we have a little more of a, like, if only if he did, I'd feel better, you know. But so you just simply start with that. You have to think of a situation where you really believed it was happening. He doesn't listen to me. Find it. And then you ask these questions. Okay, is it true? He was not listening to me in that situation. Is it true? Yes, of course it was true. Yes, that was my experience. So I love it. You have the second question. Can you absolutely know? Absolutely, with no shadow of a doubt. From it, if you were thinking about from anyone's perspective, would you say he's not listening to you? Sometimes that's a real crack into it, like, oh, I don't know. But it's okay. There's no wrong answer.
Right.
So you can say yes, especially if you have a lot of feelings about it. But you can notice if you have an emotional reaction, maybe you aren't, you don't have every, you know, part of the puzzle.
Maybe you're triggered in that moment. Yeah. You're not seeing the big picture.
Yeah. And then the third question is, how do you react when you believe this is happening, he doesn't listen to me? And you kind of sit with that and meditate with it. If you're doing it with a facilitator, you tell them how you react.
Nice.
And then the fourth question is, who would you be without the thought? Who would you be? What would you be? What would it be like? What would it feel like? And that's, it's tricky. Sometimes at first the mind will be like, what? It's, you have to use your imagination, but the mind is so brilliant mm-hmm. at using its imagination. I mean, it can remember things, it goes fast. So as soon as you just open up to become willing to imagine, what would it be like if I was in that same exact situation and he was acting the same way and I didn't have the thought, he should listen to me, and he isn't. Like, what if it's just, there he is doing what he's doing? So that's a interesting feeling. It's not about being passive either. It's just being clear. That's what I found. It's just about being kind of clear. And then you turn it around. So you do the four questions, answer them, but you also turn it around. And you turn it around in several different ways. And sometimes this is tricky when you haven't done it a lot, but simple opposite. He does listen to me. He is listening to me, even in that situation. Any example? Well, he did hear what I had to say, and then he had something to say back. You know, you just find even the tiniest little, it's like trying on a coat, you know. Let's just try on this coat perspective of he is listening to me. I also, one of my favorite turnarounds almost all the time is I didn't listen to myself in that situation. I thought there was something wrong with listening, and I thought he wasn't doing it. But could I have been doing it? Could I have been also somebody who wasn't listening in that moment, even to myself, my own heart, my own needs, my own? It's amazing, because you kind of, who did the not listening first?
Mm-hmm.
No fault or blame.
Right.
It's just noticing your part. Could my presence in this, here I am in the with this person, did I already have a carrying luggage, as we say, you know?
Yes.
I already come in thinking I wouldn't be listened to, and I'm not even listening to myself. And then the other turnaround is turned around to the other, we call it. It's I am not listening to him.
Ah, yes.
In the situation.
Right.
Like somebody might be saying, I don't ever want to speak to you again. And you're like, no, this is terrible. Well, maybe you're not listening to they're saying, I don't ever want to speak to you again. They look upset. They don't want to talk, you know. I mean, there's just sort of a interesting acceptance in all of it. And you have to try it on with each piece. Sometimes people say that they wind up feeling like it's more, there's some self-blame in it. Mm. Like, what's my responsibility here? I have too much, I'm not listening to myself. Oh no, right, I've always not done that. That's terrible. And that's not really what this is all about. It's about really having a lot of compassion for yourself, for the other person, for this moment in time. That is, it is interesting to notice whenever we have a troubling situation, it is over. you forget, oh yeah, he's not listening to me today.
Mm-hmm.
He just wasn't listening to me in that conversation,
in that
last
moment.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of helpful to also bring you back to the present, but it's able to work on those things that keep looping back, you know, that we feel unresolved.
Right.
It's a great way to resolve them.
I found it very interesting way to find patterns or old belief systems or, you know, things that we've set up for ourselves.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, so
also.
Good.
Yeah. So how do you bring that into the work?
Oh, my goodness. One of my favorite questions when people want to do the work is sometimes they come knowing what's really, really bothering them. But sometimes people just have a feeling that something's really, really bothering them.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't really know what it is. They just, like, let's say they just feel anxious all the time.
Right.
Well, sometimes just slowing that down for only about 10 minutes, like if the anxiety could speak, what would it say? And it might be bouncing around all over the place, but you see there's a theme, you know, all you really need to do is find one thing that the mind seems to be anxious about and feel like its survival is threatened, you know, but so I help people sometimes with that when they feel like they feel troubled and they're not exactly sure why. It doesn't take very long to find something where they felt hurt. But a great question with the work is, where have you ever in your life felt betrayed?
Hmm.
Betrayal is amazing.
Right. Yeah.
If you just kind of like close your eyes and contemplate and go all the way back, as far back as you need to go, you can even write down the things that come up. Well, I felt betrayed that moment. Now you've got some situations, and then you can identify your thinking about just one of them, just one at a time. I like it's all broken out. Don't do it all at once. Mm-hmm. Just find one situation, you know, where you felt betrayed. And there's a great one of the first steps is called the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet, which you'll be very familiar with because yes. you took that workshop. But that's so great to answer all the questions that are on the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet.
For people who are listening, can you explain the worksheet a little bit?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's got 6 questions on it. It's a way to get in writing what your troubled thinking is about a situation. You're not even doing the work yet. You're not answering the 4 questions. You're not turning anything around. You're just letting the emotion speak, that is the very stressed out or the anxious or the upset emotion. You're just letting it talk on paper. And it's like, why are you upset? That's the first question. I'm upset because, and you write it down. Mm-hmm. And you might, maybe you want to write for a whole page. But then there's a worksheet and you can kind of like summarize and get it condensed into, mm-hmm. see if you can get it condensed into a couple sentences. And then it's like, how do I want that person to change or that situation, whatever it is I'm looking at? How do I want it to change? What should it be doing? What's my advice that I would give that person? You know, because our mind goes there really yeah. fast. What do I need? What did I need in that situation to make me happy? What would I need to make me happy to fix it in a way? You know, and then what do I never want to experience again that I experienced in that situation? You also get to make a list in there. That person is,
yeah.
you know, rude, selfish, mean. You just see what you'd call the names you call them. But then you've got it on paper. And people often feel really uncomfortable writing their judgments down. They're like, I want to get rid of my judgments. I don't want to make them come out in the open. Mm. But that's the thing about this work is you bring them out in the open. They just aren't so big as they once right. seemed like. So that's the way to go. It's like that saying that's the way out is through.
Yes.
That's how you do it.
That's yeah, you how have to walk through those negative yes. feelings to get to the other side for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then, so you're being awake to and questioning your thoughts.
Yes.
So the next process.
So the next process. So I find it. So I went to the school after I read that book, mm-hmm. Loving What Is, which is really the handbook for the work. It's just the only, she's written a few more books, but that's a really, really, really fantastic one. It's the one that has the whole process in it, and it was the first, as I understand. So, Loving What Is. But I went to the school, which is 9 whole days of doing the work.
Oh, wow.
There weren't lots of workshops in the work.
And you were doing this while you were in college, or did you go after college?
It was after that grad school. It was after okay. grad school. Yeah, it was a few years after, and I would just still, but I was really opened up to all the whatever self-help things are out there, you know, by grad school. And and then also just so interested, just constantly looking, searching for, you know, I loved it and also had a seeking kind of feeling inside. And so I really got to learn it when I was there. You definitely have, you started with a Judge Your Neighbor worksheet, mm-hmm. but you kind of sink into it, doing it over and over again. So you've got your thoughts written down and you sit with them. And one thing I like about the school for the work with Katie guiding it is that she has modules, excuse me,
okay.
where you get to look at certain issues that are common and very frightening for people, like death and dying, mm. or loss, or your body,
right.
you know, and disease, pain, hurt, injury, mm-hmm. trauma on the body. And, you know, I might not have thought of that unless I had been there. So I'll do that sometimes with people.
Okay.
But, you know, you just get to look at a situation, see what your objections are to it, and then begin to write. So one of my experiences at that school, my father died of leukemia fairly young. And it had been very devastating for my family and my 3 sisters. Oh, we were all sorry. Just like so, you know, it was just like this key turning point. He got cancer and 2 years later he died.
Wow.
And it was like the longest amount. I mean, they said at first he has 6 months to live.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us have faced things like that with people that we love or even ourselves. I later had my own cancer diagnosis, but I had the work and it was like nothing. It was very interesting. But when I was at that very first school, mm-hmm. that was the thing that was like this huge, because I don't think when I read the book, I thought, well, what about my dad when he died? I mean, I wasn't really thinking. It had been a long time
right.
since he had died. You know, I just felt kind of over it, or, you know, lived my life, went to college, mm-hmm. got married, all these things without my father right. being alive. But he was a really sweet, wonderful professor at the University of Washington. I loved him very much. And he was very dear to his four daughters. He only had four daughters, no sons. And so I had lots of memories as soon as I tapped into that, of being by his bedside, knowing he was sick, the terror that I felt, feeling like I missed him, the grief. Mm. And when I was at that school, I wrote a worksheet where the very first line was, "I am upset, like, with reality because my father died." So I questioned, my father died. Is it true? I was like, well, yeah.
Wow.
But then when I really thought, can I absolutely know? Like, I realized I remembered him. If I had a conversation with him in my head, I would know what he said back. I sometimes imagined that I saw him places my whole life. He was stuck at the same age of, like, you know, 60 years old.
Right. Beautiful.
Yeah. So it's like he hadn't completely died. Yeah, in his body, mm-hmm. but very much with me, and even with the family, mm-hmm. with my sisters. So I just suddenly went, wow, what if I've been wrong about death and dying? Mm. And I felt like I was wrong. And I kind of had this, oh my gosh, wow, this is amazing. I don't know. I just had this lightness lift
That's
off.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was really very, very powerful. I went back. I felt like a changed person, because that's some of the most traumatic things, you know, the loss of by death. Yes. And then later, when I had a cancerous tumor on my leg, I definitely felt the adrenaline.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
When the doctor says, okay, we did that biopsy, and they don't look, you know, like, they shouldn't have to say anything. And I was just like, oh.
Yeah, you're reading the energy already.
Oh, my gosh.
You're expecting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it is cancer.
Diagnosis. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I just began, because I had the work in me and I had been practicing it for a little bit, I'd only been practicing it for about a year. It was only a year after.
Wow, what a gift.
At first, it was amazing.
You know, that the universe brought that into your life.
I know.
To be able to work a little bit and then have this diagnosis and have that tool to be able to work with.
It was incredible.
You know, during the process.
And you can get to the turnarounds like, it's horrible that I have cancer. It's not horrible. You could even say it's okay, or it's wonderful that I have cancer.
Yeah, those turnarounds are really difficult.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And
I can't even imagine with the diagnosis what, you know, going there.
And it is absolutely astonishing that if you just hold it and wait, you might have to wait a day.
Mm-hmm.
I had this recognition of different examples coming in. They can be so tiny. They don't have to be big. Like, why is it a good thing that today I'm going through this experience? And I would find something, you know, like my little daughter just, you know, drew me a picture that's so beautiful. And then some friends came over that I hadn't seen in years. And I was estranged from my husband. I had the most bizarre experience when I went through the school for the work mm-hmm. in 2005. The day that I came home, my husband told me, "I'm glad you had such an amazing experience. It sounds incredible. I've kind of been meaning to talk to you for a while. Maybe there's not ever really a good time, but this is maybe the best time I've ever thought of so far, but I don't want to be married anymore."
Wow.
So then I got to really do the work.
Yes, you did.
And in that process, like, so about a year later, when I had that cancerous tumor on my leg, he knocked on my door. He showed up. He brought roses, and when he left, I said, "Oh my God, that's an example of a turnaround."
Wow, that's beautiful, Grace.
Yeah, because it was so,
you know, to go through such a huge transition,
yeah,
be yet in another transition of your life, and
then
have something you know, beautiful happen because of it.
Yeah, it was a huge reordering of my whole world with body function, marriage, relationship, parenting, everything.
Wow,
and it was it's not easy, but it's easier if you have the work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I would do if I didn't have the work, because it was like, I would just hear that question, "Is this absolutely true?"
Yeah.
You know, like, I would say, "My life is over." That's not true. It's not true as it turns out. It's 100% not true.
Mm.
You know,
Yeah, it's amazing the stories that we tell ourselves in these situations.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. Could you explain, that would actually be a good segue. What are the stories, you know, these stories that we tell ourselves? Why do we have these stories? And what can we do to stop or turn around these stories?
I just love that question. I find that a fascinating thing to wonder about. I did.
Me too.
Sometime in the past couple of years only, I read an article or something around that many of our, about 70 to 80% of our thoughts are cautionary. You could call them negative survival, like the ones that are these fast, just busy thoughts. And we're just hooked up like that to survive, you know, like it's from maybe there's, I know there's neurology and brain. I like that. I have not studied that well, but I'm reading some, you know, they call like the lizard brain or your base brain, your like, you know, animal brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe that just thing gets to over-functioning, especially in a culture where there's lots of noise and ideas about what we're supposed to do to be successful. You can't just relax, time, you know, rush.
And so how can I keep this person safe? That lizard brain's always on.
Totally.
Safety.
Mm-hmm. Everything's about like, and they kind of have the core belief of like, the world is a dangerous place.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be ready, on alert, bracing yourself. Which is a tough place. And it's great to just, I find that answering the questions as you rise up to something that does feel like you're actually going up. I mean, they sometimes, I think, refer to it as a higher brain, you know, or a more less, I think that it is great that we are animals too, you know, connected to the earth, you're an animal, you're an organism, but you answer the questions and you're kind of more in a broader consciousness, you know, that isn't just assuming.
Mm-hmm.
That the shadow that's flying over is going to hurt you. No, it was just a bird.
Just a bird, not a pterodactyl. You're
right.
Safe. Not going to be dinner tonight.
Right. Yeah. So I don't really know why so much and why some people are so tortured, you know, feel very tortured by anxiety. But it's wonderful to have this process or just to see too that you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure. Many people do. Have this, I mean, and then to have your something about the way the mind works too is it just gathers, it's like putting things in files,
right?
Storing things from the past, you know, remember this because I don't have this ever happen again, you know, preventative caution,
right? Can you give an example maybe to someone's in a situation and they come up with a story for the situation and kind of how you would walk them through that?
Yeah. Well, I was just speaking with, a client last week who was new. She has a daughter that she feels so concerned about because her daughter has been on drugs, gotten off drugs, then is drinking, and she thinks she's drinking again. And she's just had a long pathway of the daughter being addicted off and on. And she's just was ready to jump on an airplane, see her, do something about it. And waking up in the middle of the night, every night again, like she has in the past. And it's the daughter's an adult. And so I just helped her write out those thoughts first about worst case scenario in some ways, because it's in her mind. Some of it is going back to what it happened, like how scared she was when it first happened, when her daughter, she got a call, you know, and had to pick her up in the jail. And just like how devastating that felt to her at the moment. So you just hold still on that situation. And then we write out the questions, or I just ask her those to answer those questions. What are your thoughts in that moment? Because it's interesting too. The mind will, maybe she's scared my daughter will die. Like that's what kind of the core belief would be. Except for since that hasn't happened, it's where the mind travels. But the worst, so that might be her worst case, her greatest fear. And you could do inquiry on that. You know, it's interesting. But the scariest thing that actually happened to her that she really remembered, which you could always question any memory because it's kind of might not have all the details to it, you know, full, was going to jail and picking her daughter up.
Right.
So she can just remember being in that moment. How did I want my daughter to change in that moment? What should she have done? What do I need to be happy? And then you just take one of those at a time through the work. You can kind of see a lot. You can't change those other people. And, you know, this woman, very learned. She knew that. But to walk through and then see, it kind of gives you your prescription for how to handle, manage the situation. Is there a way I can get what I need in this moment? Can I give that to myself? And am I not trying everything, you know, with my daughter?
Mm-hmm.
It helps with the letting go or just going ahead and doing it. You know, if I have stressful thoughts about, I'm going to go to her, to where she lives and knock on her door. But if it's not aggressive, you know, you get to feel what it is when it's in service, when you know it's right.
Mm.
You get that, the Buddhists say right action. And a lot of us think I need to know what the right action is. I find over and over again, when I do the work, I get much closer to this is what feels like the right action in the next hour. In the next day, I know,
right.
I know what to do. I don't have to do anything more than what I know right now.
Yeah. Processing through your emotions,
yeah,
and your triggers, and, you know, processing through. So you get to a place, it sounds like, where you're responding instead of reacting
yes.
out of your emotions.
Yes.
Right.
So, so, so helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, you just have a much more loving, open-minded response.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great way to put it. Response, not reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not assuming. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You just watch your mind go like, but what about this? You know, like, but it's a question instead of just an assumption.
Yeah. Because you don't know.
Yeah.
It is just an assumption.
Yeah.
And you really do have to ask.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's sweet. When people, that was a one-on-one kind of situation with the client. People do the exact same thing if they show up at retreat. You know, you start with the first evening, we always start, just find one situation, and we might do some talking to find the situation, but a lot of people already know right where they want to go. They know what's bugging them.
With in the moment.
Yes. Yes.
And I find with workshops too, you, things just start popping in for you before you even arrive at the workshop
yeah.
that you're meant to work on, which
totally.
I think is fabulous.
Yes.
So you're showing it there. Okay, let's work on this.
Yes, I know. So good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you really get things, you hear other people and you feel so much, so not alone for having mm-hmm. all these judgments and fears. And it's just a human condition to have the fears and judgments running. It's just, it's
yeah.
what we do. You don't have to be anxious all the time though. I think that's, you know, just part of the mind, but it doesn't have to be there.
And in yeah. a group, you're like, oh, I'm not alone.
Totally.
You know, and not only that, you know, that connection, but also you're learning from everybody and their stories at the same time. And
yes.
group work just takes you way beyond what you can do one-on-one.
I find that so much. Somebody might have even been doing the work. They might be familiar with the work. They've even gone to the school for the work. They come to a workshop and they like bump into the place where they have gotten stuck. And they say, does anybody else, say, does anybody see any turnarounds here? You know, they can't, I have no turnaround examples. I cannot find how he does listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't, never, he never does. And then people might, I just ask the person, are you open to hearing if anyone has got something?
Nice.
And people will find things and they'll be like, oh, right. I don't know. It's just very sweet. It's like the power of the group becomes a little bigger than
mm-hmm.
our own individual.
Definitely. Because sometimes when we're in it or in the moment or it's like stuck on that thought, we can't find a turnaround.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it takes me 24 hours.
Yes.
You know,
totally.
Okay,
yes.
What is that turnaround? But to have somebody, you know, give examples or thoughts or ideas or,
yeah.
you know, intuition on what they think, you know, it could be from their own experience. That's always
yeah.
really helpful.
So helpful. I know. I love that. I just love it.
I love that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So we work on a lot of conditioning, you know, through this work as well. Can you discuss that a little bit?
Yeah. Oof. Some of my favorite. Just because that conditioning usually goes way back. Family of origin, which I love to say, foo. Foo.
Oh, I like that.
Family of origin work. And in fact, I run a year-long program that's just starting, and we always start the first month with foo. So you just find one character from your, you know, it's usually mom or dad,
mm-hmm.
a sibling, aunt, uncle, grandparents. But really just to study and look at the conditioning based on, I mean, there's so much around that, like as a child, from my family, from my ancestors, my particular ancestors, you know, the line of the lineage that went back, and then also gender and roles and, you know, expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really fabulous to find those. They just naturally come because they repeat in your life.
Yes.
You know, like you respond to things and it doesn't work very well. You react based on your conditioning, and when mm-hmm. you can keep the conditioning that is really great, that works for you. That's fine.
Yes.
It's just, you know, the ones that don't, because they produce these really troubling, upset, uncomfortable emotions. Often that's from conditioning. And sometimes it can be from thoughts that have been there three generations back, and no one knows why there's so much fear. You know, we're all going to die. You have and sometimes we've criticized ourselves. Like, I have this anxiety because I'm afraid we're all going to die, or that we're going to have total cutoff and loss. And, but maybe three generations back or two generations back only, mm-hmm. that actually happened.
Yeah.
You know, in your family. And so your family was kind of living like that mm-hmm. with that fear.
Yeah,
you know, somebody like
a war.
Yeah. And the kids are being raised like with this, you know, kind of a nervous parents, or people that died in the Holocaust, or mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yeah.
And then they kind of, the conditioning, you know, like it's like you're swimming in the soup of that's a possibility that you got to watch out for any minute, any day, or any year. You know, it doesn't have to be top of the mind in the family, mm-hmm. but you just realize you hold it. You know, you're like, wow, I kind of believe that's true. I'm acting like I believe that's true, and you're not even sure what it is, but you can question them. It's great. And I just find sometimes those family moments, you know, where you had an interaction with mother, father, sister, brother,
mm-hmm.
and you just identify it, even if you can't remember it perfectly because it's old, but you just know it happened. Oh, I had this one where I did the work once on, I was hiding under the bed of one of my sister's bedrooms. And I said, I have this great idea. You call our other sister, call her in here. I'm going to hide under your bed. And then ask her what she thinks of me. And you guys can talk about me
while
I'm in here. I'm the oldest. And I think like I'm, you know, oh, they're going to say, I mean, I didn't even think, you know. So I get under her bed, and my sister, who's only a year younger, calls to the other one. She enters the room and she goes, you know, so what do you think about Grace? And the sister says, oh, she's so mean. She's horrible, you know. And then there's this huge silence, and I'm like in the dark under the bed.
Uh-huh.
And then you can hear the one who just answered the question say, is Grace in here? Because you could tell probably the look on the face, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I just rolled out from under the bed and ran through the bedroom and ran out the door, and we never discussed it again for years.
Oh, wow.
And I had that so vividly. I was probably only like 11. I was maybe 11 years old, and my sister was 10, and my other mm-hmm. sister was, you know, 8.
Wow.
And but I wrote a Judge Your Neighbor worksheet on it, on like the fear that came up in the moment, the adrenaline, hearing that person thinks I'm awful.
Mm-hmm.
And what an amazing thing to, and like what the danger is of that. It felt like beyond the situation danger,
mm-hmm.
like you will be out of this, you're hated and you're out of this family and you're not, you know, that can happen. So it's a pattern in my family to cut off people if you get really mad. If you get really mad. And like way back, mm-hmm. like, you know, generations back. And then even immigration.
It's a common one too.
Yeah. People immigrating, and they have no, they've left their homeland,
mm-hmm.
and there is no, so on both sides of my family is immigration only one generation, two generations.
Wow.
Yeah. No longer with a home, or the homeland is, you'll never see it again.
Right.
Ever. So there's like a thing there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, so it's that was an interesting one to, and then just see how it comes out in my own life, like day to day. It changed.
And it's interesting how it sounds like you kind of peeled the layers, and then you were able to track it back,
yeah.
you know, to an origin,
yes.
and then all of the different circumstances were
yes.
happened to at the same time.
Yeah.
And then were you able to talk to your sister about it after?
Yes. So wonderful. I mean, that one that said, she's so mean, I hate her. I absolutely love her. We have such a close, intimate relationship. She actually did the school for the work, too.
Oh, awesome. So you guys can do it together.
Yes. Yes, nice. We did. It's
nice when you speak the same language.
That's really.
Sometimes it takes you a little bit deeper than just the surface.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a lot of gratitude, and gratitude for the one who asked the question too, that one, you know, and just all their dynamics and how they are, the family, mm-hmm. you know. But it's just great to see it. If you're conditioned, you know, you talk about conditioning, it just shows up in the world, like somebody at work, you know, before I was, now I've been working full time for several years doing only the work of Byron Katie. It's nice. Very, yeah, there's a lot of work. It's great. But I did work part time for a while. And, you know, even at my jobs or being on boards, I remember, mm-hmm. you know, I'd be like, oh, that person, I'm having that reaction. And what do you know? It's sibling or mother or father, you know, it's the same thing. It's the same. So yeah. It kind of heals it. And I just, the awareness made me be differently with that person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No cutting off, like reach out,
right.
Go over there, talk to her. And it's made all the difference. This tiny little things make a difference.
Yeah, it's beautiful how once you have the awareness, you can change it.
Yes.
You don't have to repeat the same pattern over and over again. You can do something new.
Yes. I love you don't even have to know exactly what to do. You just do it differently.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
God, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Let's see. You've also got Eating Peace Process.
Yeah.
You know, out of this work. Can you discuss that a little bit?
Yeah. Oh my goodness, that is, so, you know, when you stay working with, in the work of Byron Katie, or even decide to train and become a certified facilitator, it's quite a long process, and it's, you're doing the work for a lot of hours, and doing a lot of workshops, and you do a second school, and a third school, or with Byron Katie also.
Mm-hmm. And this is on top of your previous education and your, you know, and best year.
Yes.
And your graduate.
I know.
Years. Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of got like this landed so well. And I just wanted to, I was so passionate about doing this simple thing and getting to be, know it so well and deeply. And then how different people tended to respond to it mm-hmm. and, you know, how to help them even get into it or get it.
Gosh, it's fantastic.
Yeah. It's wonderful. So at some point along the way, people were asking me, you know, I remember that you mentioned once that you had an eating disorder, or if they were just coming to do something on the work, like they drink too much wine or they want to quit smoking. That's one of their primary issues. And how can I apply the work? And I'd be like, okay, so I know what that was like for me, completely healing an eating disorder. Like it's just non-existent.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And there was several different factors. And so it's not always immediate, but I started getting a little more narrowed down with that. I mean, at first, quite honestly, I had some resistance. It's like, oh, eating disorder life. I don't, you know, I got to do a little bit of my own work again, mm-hmm. just as a, would I be willing to hear people's thoughts about all that crazy stuff that we get in our brain about your food religion and your body should be thinner and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just went, oh, people are really asking. So let's just do it and see what happens and begin to work with people. And then I made a group program called the Eating Peace Process. So it wasn't like the Eating Peace total answer for all time, you know, like, I mean, it just, but it did, there's some key things that really help people completely stop the whole craziness in the mind. Like talk about anxiety and voices in the head.
Yeah.
I mean, it can just go bananas with eating food and for more women than men, because being and how you appear seems to be an important function for several
unfortunately in society. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just started identifying those thoughts, you know, just even if you start even with, I need to be thinner, because it's just sometimes that is constantly in a woman's mind. There are men who think it too,
mm-hmm.
but it's just, I need to be thinner. I need to be more beautiful. I need to be, you have an ideal version and it's very vivid because it's in pictures and movies and culture, and your mother might've thought it about herself. So conditioning, my mother certainly did.
Mm-hmm, like, mine too, yeah.
Yeah. I remember being 8. And so some of the work I started to do with Eating Peace was I had a strong memory of my mom going to Weight Watchers when I was only 8. And I started, if you ever got candy at school, I would bring it home and go like, see, I didn't eat it. Isn't that great? She'd go like, that's wonderful, honey. You know, yeah, it's bad. Junk food is really bad. You're so good. And so it just was like, really in me, you know, starting to get in me right then. Mm-hmm. I better not eat any junk food. And so then you have this kind of resistant thing and yeah, sugar's terrible and it's gonna, it or whatever your thing is, mm-hmm. you know, many different things. And just noticing your resistance and to people get afraid sometimes of questioning the thought that you need to be thinner. Because they'll think, well, that means I never will be. I'll just be like this and I'll just eat whatever I want. Oh, if I eat whatever I want, I'll just eat from one end of the kitchen to the other end of Ashon, you know,
wow.
and I won't stop. So their perception of their own desires and wants is that it's way beyond control.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an interesting thing. Is that really what I want? Are you sure that's what you want? Because if you were just totally happy eating and eating and eating and never stopping and stuffing yourself, you would be happy. You're not happy. No one's ever happy when they do that. So it's not really what you want. You don't want that. But there is something incredibly compelling with the compulsive cycle, like the 10 minutes before you start to want to eat something and then you actually do eat something. And it's not just with food. It kind of does its job. It's like I heard Byron Katie say once about alcohol and drugs. They do their job, which is to help you escape or calm down or let go of fear or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But if you, the more you kind of look at then what you're afraid of or what you feel stressed about or what you're upset of and what you're yelling at yourself in your head, if you question them, just the interest or the need to escape or comfort yourself through these many pleasurable things of life, including eating,
mm-hmm.
just falls away. It just simply falls away. So you can do the work on your stressful thinking. But I do like to, when I work with people, have them kind of look at all the very, very repetitive anxious thoughts.
Right.
About body shape. And then what I call it, the food religion. I got that from
That's
Katie.
A great name.
Yeah. Katie said she had a religion of pick up your socks with her kids. That was her religion. Pick up your socks. And it was just like that everyone should be cleaning things and, mm-hmm. you know, like the household.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, I had a food religion, like an eating religion. There's all these rules. And of course, that makes you just feel almost like, I can't eat anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I would just be on these huge binges and then I'd starve myself and then binge and then starve myself and very, very self-critical, really horrible. And that just faded away. And I was very scared of hunger, even though I starved myself. I was scared of hunger. I realized at one point, like, oh, I'm terrified of being hungry. And I put myself in this fearful situation ever since my first diet when I was 14.
Wow.
I've been
14.
I was like threatening myself.
Mm.
The survival brain didn't like that very much, you know?
No.
So it was like rebelling, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I could do it really well, but unhappily. So.
God, how wonderful to be able to take your experience, you know, and transfer it into something that's helping people, you know, through group work.
I love it because I feel like it, most problems, maybe every problem starts in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So even that, you know, your reactive problem, it's a reaction. Eating and freaking out about food is a reaction. And it's like also to be really gentle and compassionate with yourself. Like, wow, you're really scared. You are so scared that you want to just eat and eat and eat right now. Or run 10 miles. Like I used to do that too. All the, you know, harsh things.
Mm-hmm.
So just like relaxing and being a normal human
that
doesn't have to be thinner is really nice.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Also, you mentioned compassion,
mm-hmm.
and I noticed on your website, beautiful website, so definitely check
Thank
out her
you.
Website. You have worked with many spiritual teachers. So, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, the work around meditation, which I'm sure you bring to your work as well, you know, either one-on-one or with groups.
Yeah.
You know, how could you not?
I know. Yeah. I love that question. It's so sweet. Silence. In some ways, I realized somewhere along the way with doing the work of Byron Katie, my relationship with silence is just like not good. You know that when you put relationship status, I'm married to it, I'm committed, I'm divorced. It's complicated. I'd be like, it's complicated, or I'm divorced from silence. You know, I just don't get along with it very well because then I hear myself. So I just loved getting, you know, realizing that. And it was very close after, it was like really after I got introduced to Byron Katie and all that stuff was happening, you know, maybe my marriage is changing, which it did. Got that cancer tumor on my leg, all that. Everything is happening very rapid fire. I also went to my first longer meditation retreat. I had tried meditating in the past, and sometimes it was great, but sometimes it was like, you're in a bad neighborhood.
Yeah.
And,
really?
Yes. And I loved, I went to a beautiful teacher who I just think is so wonderful called Adyashanti.
Oh, love Adyashanti.
Yeah, I love him. And I just went to the, like, then I went to another one with him and another one with him. I just found it so incredibly peaceful. And that wasn't true my very first retreat with him. I was like, we were up on a mountain way somewhere in California where it's far, far away and you windy roads all the way in. I'm like, can a helicopter take me away from this place? Can I, is there a way out? I wonder if I can hitchhike. Cause I was like feeling like crazy in my head. And, but thank goodness I had the work. I would just, you can have one pen and paper and you can journal, but he even suggests no reading material.
Right.
And I just, thank goodness I had the work because I just
wow,
would do the
great
work.
Idea.
Yes. Just do it. See what you're thinking. You know, why can't you look where you are? You're on top of a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is taken completely care of. So really all you have left is your thinking. It kind of like takes out all the need to do anything to for your own survival. So you really are left with only your thoughts. And I just realized they were still quite loud and busy even though I'd just done the school, but I had the work. So I wrote up in the middle of the night, 3:30 in the morning.
Awesome.
I'm writing, I'm doing the work. And I calmed down. And then I started just loving the meditation. Oh my gosh.
Oh, I'm going to have to try that.
So beautiful. Oh, yeah. So we do. We are silent and we meditate and we spend, I even think of the work itself as meditation. Like you ask a question, who would you be without the thought? Now just meditate for half an hour. Just see what happens then. You don't even have to necessarily just write immediately. It's that's a beautiful thing. Or meditate on your turnarounds. Like when you see, oh, I don't listen to myself. Well, I wonder how I could listen to myself better. Oh, meditating. You know, like just really be with yourself as if you were a loving parent to yourself. You know, really kind, compassionate. It just
oh, lovely.
It's very sweet. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's nice. You, so you lead workshops and do retreats. And I saw online that you have four upcoming. You know, would you like
I
to talk about
do.
Those?
Yeah.
Great.
So here in the Northwest, I do two at Brighton Bush each year. Which
love Brighton Bush.
It's so,
went there
isn't
for
it?
The first time last year. It's gorgeous.
So gorgeous, yeah. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I know. I heard about it growing up and I kind of thought it was like a hippie commune or something. But I mean, you go and it's just absolutely pristine, beautiful Oregon cascades, gorgeous little cabins with the, everything's, you know, sustained on its own energy, beautiful hot springs, incredible food.
Amazing food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I was invited to come teach there. It's the first time I ever was there. It was as a teacher, as a presenter. And
wonderful.
It was, I think, my 10th or 11th retreat there was the last time I did it. But I do one in the winter now, early December for 3 nights, and then one in June every year. That's the one I've done every year. And it's beautiful. And this year, and I have a fabulous co-leader, co-facilitator, Tom Compton, who has also been doing the work longer than I have, 30 years. He is an amazing person.
Oh, cool.
I just asked him, you know what, would you like to come do the retreat with me? And he's like, I am so in. It was just,
great.
We did it last June and it was like, it just was so smooth and incredible. We loved it. We loved working
together.
It was just like, this is in the flow. So, okay, come back next time, Tom. Do it with me again. So, yeah, so we're doing it again. And that's the longest one we'll do is in June. We'll do actually 6 days together at Brighton Bush.
Wow.
Yeah, really gives time
to
sink into it. And I do an eating one only, eating peace, in January in Seattle. have people flying in to see Seattle, Washington for the first time, and they're coming in January. I'm like, warning, you're going to be in a little boom.
Actually, the perfect time to do the work.
I think so.
They're not going to want to, you know, run out and see everything in Seattle. They're going to huddle in and hibernate with the work.
Yes. I love it. It's perfect. A great way to describe it. So I always rent I always rent this beautiful little retreat house that, you know, a woman runs for weddings and retreats that's right in my neighborhood. And so people can stay there. And we have the whole house to ourselves. And it has a hot tub in it. And we just sit in the living room and push all the furniture back and make a circle. And we're in the work.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's lovely. So, and I always do a spring retreat in May at that same. So the Eating Peace retreat and then the May retreat, same place. I'm about to do my fall retreat in Pennsylvania.
Nice.
Yeah, because people just said, can you ever come, instead of in Seattle, could you come do it on the East Coast? And I was like, well, why not? Okay. And boom. We're doing it in Pennsylvania,
great.
So I think it'll be fun.
All right, everybody, go online and check out those retreats and see if any of them resonate with you and sign up. They're coming in a couple weeks. So, you know, if there's any space, you can get right in. Great. So how do people find you?
Well, workwithgrace.com is my website. And I know there's lots of stuff, all the different things that I do there. Best thing to do is probably just get on the mailing list, Grace Notes. Which is a blog that I used to write it every single day. I would do the work. Somebody said it's doing the work in front of people, and I just send it out. And then I got carpal tunnel on my thumbs. It's just like, okay, let's just smooth down. Let's slow down on the whole blog thing. And so I do it at least once a week.
Oh, that's nice.
Sometimes twice a week. Yeah. And that's just nice because it's just free getting Grace Notes in your inbox. Mm-hmm. And then I always, at the bottom, like if I'm doing, the retreat's coming. There's a link, you know, whatever, so people can learn about it that way. And I do have a eatingpeaceprocess.com. I also have a mailing list for that that's separate. And I do a YouTube every week.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Like, you know, you just learn the different media. And that happened.
So is that under your name or?
It is. Okay. It is. Everything else was taken by the time I got into the YouTube. So it's Grace. I think it's Grace Elizabeth Bell.
Okay.
Like a long kind of. But if you probably did Eating Peace with Grace or Grace Bell Eating Peace, you'd find the YouTube channel. But it is Grace Elizabeth Bell, Elizabeth with an S. I'm pretty sure. Or maybe it's Work with Grace, Byron Katie Coach. Anyway, you get the idea. Like, I don't even know what the name of my own channel is. Okay.
Well, we could Google your name. Probably it would pop up that way too.
Yes. You know? Yes. Yeah.
You know, on Google usually.
And you know what I have?
YouTube channel.
Anybody who's here that really feels struggle with the eating, Byron Katie did an interview with me on eating. And she knew that I was so eager and I've been sitting with this for 4 or 5 years and working with people. And I said, Katie, will you talk to me about eating? And it's just a wonderful interview. So it's on my YouTube channel.
Awesome.
Yeah. And it's just tons of views. So it's, Katie has some really interesting answers around. I just asked her some of the same questions, you know, like, how was eating for you? And she was like, well, I weighed, you know, 200 and something pounds. But when I had my awakening, you know, I mean, it's really amazing to hear her speak to that. So it's just there for anyone to watch.
Cool. We have about another minute. Is there anything that you want to share about any upcoming things or anything about yourself before we say goodbye?
I don't think so. You've done such a good job on asking me what's coming. It's great. So thank you. Wonderful to be here.
God, it's been so great to have you, Grace. And we could probably go on a little bit longer. I have a couple pages of questions that I didn't even get to, so I'd love to have you back sometime if you'd be interested.
I would love to.
Right. Thank you so much, Grace. It was wonderful having you on the show.
You're welcome.
And thank you, everyone, for joining me today on Raise the Vibe. Again, this is Liz Peterson on KVSH, on Voice of Vashon's 101.9 FM. Have a great day, everybody. And remember to get out there and raise the vibe.